G'day, thanks so much for being here. If you'd like to get notified about new episodes, get access to live gigs before anybody else and read things that are not included here in the main podcast, you can subscribe to the newsletter at oscherginsberg.com. That's oscherginsberg.com. Paint the picture of what you want more of, or lots of, in a relationship in the future.
I just don't think that I even have it in me to even comprehend being happy with someone.
Really?
Mm.
Wow.
Or like someone being nice to me.
Oh, darn.
I think I'm just kind of like, oh, well, there's no point trying anymore. So I just don't even, there's not even like a comprehension. But I used to be really proud that I was like, look, I can go to therapy and I can get through it and I can still have capacity to trust people. And yeah. But I'm just suddenly just like so like not in working order to even comprehend that. So I wouldn't even know where to start with a list of things. I try to think about why this job is so stressful to me and why it affects me so much. Like, it makes me so anxious all the time. And I think the biggest thing was that, yeah, all my failures are public and therefore everyone can laugh at me and think, haha, you thought this would do well. Mum, during The Bachelor, when I was getting trolled, told me years later that she would go in my room and check that I was breathing at night to make sure I hadn't killed myself because I was living with mum because I couldn't deal with living by myself.
Yeah, fair.
In this job, in the podcast especially, I spend all this time talking to people that are much smarter than I am in mental health, and I learn so much, and I have a way of avoiding my emotions by intellectualizing what's actually quote unquote wrong with me. So I know that I have a disorganized attachment style, that my childhood trauma can do this, and like I can recognize that this is why this is happening. But I get to the point where I go, okay, I've got like the answer to why. So why aren't I better?
I'm trying to guess how old you are. You're 29?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
28 and a half, babe, but 29.
All right. I will be marrying you by your 33rd birthday.
33, you reckon?
Before the age of 33, you will have spent enough time with yourself and with someone and you would have gone, oh, man, this is fucking it. That's Abby Chatfield. She's my guest today. I can't wait for you to hear the show. Got to play some ads to pay the bills. Back with Abby in a minute.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
G'day, welcome to the show. This is Better Than Yesterday, making it better every single episode since 2013. I'm Osher Ginsberg. I am a podcaster. I'm an author. I'm a TV host. I'm a dad. I'm a stepdad. I'm a calendar confuser. I'm a sober person. I'm glad you're here. I have worked in television for quite some time. Early public access experiments, 97, 98 or so. Got onto cable TV by 99. I've made TV all over the world. I've hosted live network primetime TV. On CBS in the USA, live across 5 time zones to millions of people. I've worked with a lot of people on camera. With a few minuscule exceptions, everyone is always wonderful. But every now and then, someone comes along who has it. I can't tell you what it is. I've been told that when I first showed up, I had lots of it. Sometimes I'd leverage it in certain situations, and from time to time, I would let it make choices that weren't the best for me or for others. And then came a time when I let it slip through my fingers. I'm happy to say that I've got it back, and I nurture and treasure and nourish it like I never did in my younger days. I certainly don't take it for granted, and I don't use it all the time. However, when I need it, I know that I can apply it and create a moment that otherwise wouldn't happen in whatever job that I'm doing. Most people who end up on camera have a certain amount of it. However, there is one person that over my entire career, I see as not only having vast amounts of it, but in the time that I've known them, has become very able and very aware of being able to regulate the deployment of it in a way that I wish I'd learned how to do when I was their age. Abby Chatfield is the most exciting figure in Australian media today, and she's only just getting started. A finance degree graduate who arrived on reality TV fresh from a career in corporate real estate. Abby absolutely exploded onto our screens in Matt Agnew's season of The Bachelor Australia. However, it was what she did next that changed everything. Earnestly, honestly, openly, she began to navigate public life with a power and a cadence which took many people by surprise. Creating her podcast, It's a Lot, pulled back the catapult that has set Abby on a course for stratospheric heights. I've since had the chance to work with Abby on a number of projects, most notably The Masked Singer. And I've never in my entire career met someone like her. She treats every gig as a learning opportunity, sees self-improvement and mastery as daily goals, and knows when she's right. But she also knows to ask for help when she needs it. She knows her worth. She knows her value. And she's not afraid to take the lead on monetizing that value, either through her podcast, her national tours, or creating a line of sex toys, which have seen phenomenal success. Abby Chatfield is an open book. So in this conversation, you are going to hear some very vivid and very graphic descriptions of mental ill health, of suicidal ideation, suicidality, suicide attempts. You'll hear how she was not only let down by the health system, but also how that very nearly ended her life. If you do need to chat to someone, don't be a silly person. Take it seriously. Call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or get in touch with your doctor wherever you are. But I left it all in because it's important to talk about. She's a force of nature, and I'm going to put this on record here. I'll get to look back on this time in my career and say to my grandkids, you see that mogul there? Yeah, that person who created vast wealth for herself and for others and owns everything that she starts and does? Yeah, Abby, yeah. I worked with her once. Yeah, I did. Ladies and gentlemen, Abby Chatfield. So people often ask, what happens to all the cheese platters on The Bachelor? And right now, you are proving exactly why. Mm-hmm. She's eating and talking.
It's not a good idea, is it?
And while you can have, you know, sometimes video content of people putting things in their mouth is good.
Mm.
Sometimes, not great on Batch. Whenever we watch Great British Bake Off, and I can't eat any of it. Celiac, vegan, you name it. Watching Paul Hollywood shove cake in his mouth, it's like just watching mastication up close. There's real no delicate way.
See, cake's quite hard and it's still going, so it's
me. Yeah. Particularly if it's like on The Bachelor and those platters have been out for a while, so the runnier cheese has reached a decent temperature of viscosity.
The brie is oozing.
Yeah, yeah, the oozy brie. Mm-hmm. And so now how are you going to be cleaning up dribbles as you go?
Well, I'm done.
You know, that cake is going to sit there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And just call your name.
Absolutely.
I know. I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to wait for a fantastic moment and like throwing a scarf over your shoulder at the end of a conversation or in the olden days, taking a cigarette out of your mouth and going and flicking it. You are going to eat that cake at some point in this conversation as an exclamation point.
And go, and exactly.
I'm waiting for it. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you came.
Oh, my God, I know. I've been – how many times have I rescheduled this?
So many times you sent me a box of cookies.
Yes, actually. Now, could you eat those cookies?
No, I couldn't.
You couldn't because they weren't gluten-free.
That's correct.
But they were vegan.
They were.
So there was an attempt made.
It's fine.
So and I kind of realised that after. I
thought went, that counts.
I forgot about.
Don't worry, there's plenty of people here that ate them.
Okay, that's good.
They had a great time.
So there was joy around you because of the cookies.
I'm happy for others. So I don't know. Like, if anything you don't feel like chatting about, you know, you just tell me.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know.
The only thing that's off limits is who I'm dating, which currently is no one, so that's not even an issue.
I'm not going to.
You don't give a fuck about that.
I really don't care.
You could not care less.
The one question I always ask you is he kind? That's it.
Yeah. Well,
that's it.
There's no one. And they are often, actually, they're never kind. When you ask that question, I go.
That's all that matters. Hot fades.
Mm.
Hot really fades.
Hot fades.
Yeah. And kind will never, kind
so true.
Never goes away. Mm. And I honestly, I have The Bachelor to thank for that. It was this really interesting moment of, I was single when I started The Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
And as we discussed, I remember like interview after interview, people asking, oh, so are you, you know, dipping your pen in the company ink? It's like, no, I'm a fucking professional. How fucking dare you?
Yeah.
And it happened again and again and again. It happened on fucking on live fucking television. It happened on The Project. I was like, what the?
Well, I need to apologize for saying that it would never happen to Osha because obviously it did.
I probably did.
Probably should have called you before I posted my rant about that. But it's, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's really offensive. And also it makes you feel like, it made me feel like I was a predator. Yeah. I was an assumed predator.
I'm a goddamn professional. Yeah. Do you know how long I would last in a gig if that happened?
You were trying to get with contestants.
Like, you would be hello, welcome to Masked Singer, I'm Dan McPherson. Like, that's what it would fucking be. It'd be like that. Mm. But Bachelor, first season and across the first two seasons, I'd never been in a room with so many incredibly smart, powerful, single women in my life.
Mm.
And, you know, occasionally there'd be, it's like Idol, like they're always the greatest singer in the room their whole life. And then now suddenly they're one of the top 12 and they're all amazing singers, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is once my brain kind of got over that, wow, everyone's really hot. And I'm like, yeah. And, you know, like, don't get me wrong. You still go, wow, she's beautiful.
Yeah.
She's stunning. She's started her own business. Like, wow. What happens after a while is it's that moment that from The Incredibles, right? If everyone's super, no one is. And so the only thing that made a difference is who was kind.
Wow, isn't that incredible?
That's the thing about this show, which I think is really interesting.
Mm.
And it really hit it off in me. Like, and I was really grateful for it because like every other bloke who, you know, grew up in the era that I did, you know, there's this kind of nearly Pavlovian response to this person's hot, I'll do anything. Like, hang on a second. What about some, you know, boundaries or do we have aligned values or, you know, all that stuff went out the window for a long time. And then having that experience was like, oh, wow, that's really, and it was so freeing.
Do you think that prepped you to meet Audrey and be so, I mean, you already met her obviously because she was she working on the first season?
No, I met her on the second season.
Do you think that made you more open to a serious, a serious, because you went, I know what I want now.
I'd been through a lot. Batch was 2 years after I got divorced.
Mm.
And so I had, you know, moments out in the field again.
maybe I mean, rather than serious, I mean looking primarily for someone kind, because Audrey's so kind.
What it did is that I really understood, and I've got to thank my man David for this, is if you've gone for what you've always gone for, you get what you always get.
Yeah, right.
And so when I meet Audrey, who's this stunning islander princess with Disney princess eyes, who cooks an incredible curry and is hilarious.
She's beautiful.
So I can't actually have a photograph. I keep it on my desk. See that photo right there?
Yeah.
So that's when we went to Disneyland. It's a picture of Audrey brushing George's hair, dressing her as Snow White for when we went to Disneyland. Georgia was 10 in that picture. She was just about to turn 11. And they'd come over to LA to visit me. And I took that photo because in that moment, I'm watching her, you know, just show just unconditional care and love to this incredible human being, G, who's now 20 and taller than me. And then that's the moment. I took that photo because like, oh my God, this is it. I don't want anything else. This is it. And that's the moment.
It's beautiful.
And I'd never been around anyone like that. And that was it. I was done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have an issue where I go for people. My therapist and I have gone through this. What you've said just then is blow my mind because right now I'm going through a breakup and I'm sick. Me, I want about dating, but this is, I think, a good segue. I'm going through a pretty bad breakup. My therapist, A, wants me to take a break from dating, obviously, but she also was saying that I have a recurring issue where I go for people who I've put on a pedestal because in this industry I have the ability to meet people that I've always, that have been celebrities since I was 15. and then end up dating them. And I it's like I feel comfortable with that power imbalance, which is really, it's a strange, like I feel comfortable being the
dominant.
One, yeah, dominated, but like being like, yeah, thinking the person I'm dating is, the first thing I go for is if I admire them, but that probably isn't a very healthy thing to do, is it?
Well, if, you know, I understand how you can set that. I understand this, right? Come on, like I have that with, mm-hmm. I have that with male colleagues.
Oh, what do you mean?
I put people in a position of you're whose approval I want.
Yes.
All right.
And it's the ones that you can't get the approval from fully?
Because I'm, you know, why set it up to make it resolve, mate? I'm not comfortable there. What I want is a thing that somehow reminds me of the baseline, which is all written before you're, you know, five essentially. Mm-hmm. And but just being aware of it is the first thing. Mm-hmm. First thing is to be aware of it. Just mm-hmm. stop for a second. Just go, hang on a second. Am I doing this thing mm-hmm. that I've done before? And it creates an incredibly unnecessary burden upon them in the work relationship.
Yeah. Right?
Because I become weird and clingy.
Do
and,
you?
Oh, fuck, it's terrible. Yeah. Not any, like way less now. Like I'm still aware of it. Like don't get me wrong, it still shows up.
Yeah.
But I intervene before it has anything manifesting.
It's not healthy. It's caused me a lot of anxiety and a lot of pain. I actually said to someone recently who we stopped being friends because he got a girlfriend and we were, you know, casually sleeping together for 3 years when we were in the same city kind of thing. And then he got a girlfriend and he's like, I want to be friends. I was like, you've haunted me for 3 years. Like, you haunt me. Like, this pedestal thing that, like, has created, also the way we were treating each other was kind of reinforcing that. But, of course, if I'm allowing myself to have no boundaries with someone who's on a pedestal. So I'm trying to release myself from that, from being haunted. I'm trying to have a seance with that person.
Let me tell you something, Matt. Like the first trainer I ever worked with who really, really, really helped me transform my body, bit of a backstory. When I got the job in America mm-hmm. on CBS doing live primetime network hosting, mm-hmm. was fucking amazing, right? I got the gig and we shot two audition episodes or whatever at the start, and then there was a 3 month break and then they were going live. Mm. Which is how it normally is with these things. As we did the Los Angeles leg of the auditions, I was sent to this stylist, Jessica Pasta. She's dressed the Pussycat Dolls, right? Amazing. So has, you know, and she's putting me on all these things and then she put me in this cardigan. I said, oh, Jessica, I think I might be a bit too lumpy for this. And she goes, oh, don't worry, sweetie, we'll get you a girdle. And I stood there looking in the mirror going, you know, this in the middle, like all these bangles on her hand, accenting the flamboyance. Yes. Yeah. Oh, don't worry, honey, we'll get you a girdle. And I was like, there's no fucking way. I've got a fucking green card. I've got my shit. Look, it's the greatest job any Australian person. Yeah. I've no fucking way I'm doing this in a girdle. So mm-hmm. I contacted this trainer. She's amazing. German, had the shit.
Okay.
And yeah, I lost like 14 kilos in 12 weeks. It was, yeah, wild. Whoa. Yeah, I worked really fucking hard to do it. And it was great. It looked amazing. But she would say to me in this kind of weird American-German accent, never forget, you are the prize.
Wow.
She must have heard the way I was speaking about my, relationships in the past mm-hmm. or the relationships I was in. She's going, you're the prize. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
You're the prize.
I was talking to my friend the other day at the beach about someone I've got a crush on, because, you know, I've always got a crush. At least I've got a crush. I'm not seeing someone, but I've always got a crush. And I was like, oh, I don't know, like, he's just very, like, I'm like, you know, he's who he is, and, you know, he's very busy doing all these things, and I feel like he must be embarrassed to be, my thing is people are embarrassed to be seen with me. That's my whole thing, is people must be embarrassed to be seen with me because they're real musicians, or they're real actors, or they're real whatever. So they must be so embarrassed to be seen with me. My friend was like, you realize that you're, regardless of who you are in media, you're actually really funny and smart and hot, and he probably is as excited about you as you are about him. And it was like my brain just, my like snapped. Like it was like I dissociated. I'd never heard someone say that to me before. And it was a very strange thing. My friends hyped me up a lot, but never in a way of like, you realize that like from their perspective, you also are very exciting to be around. Which was hard to swallow. So I'm looking forward to therapy to go through that, because I think it's very, my self-worth's pretty low at the moment, to be honest.
It, she's, you know, your friend's not wrong. Okay? Your friend's not wrong.
Mm.
And it's important to recognize that, you know, and it can be hard, you know, right? But look, you just act as if, you know, act as if, and then after a while, you know, did you watch Dance Life?
No.
I watched it with G. Some of the kids who were MIBs on Masked Singer were on it. It's the story of a dance school nearby.
Mm.
And of Britney Spears' dance captain, well, she works for Square Division, who do all the things, right? Yeah. So you see her on the floor, Yasmin. She's amazing.
Okay.
And she's going down the line going, what do you want to be? What do you want to be? What do you want to be? And this one kid just like, and after the show, she, whatever audition, when she drags the kid aside, she goes, what did you actually want to tell me? Because you froze up. She goes, I wanted to tell you professional dance, but I didn't feel that I had the right to say it.
Mm.
She goes, I tell you what, you start calling yourself a professional dancer. You do all the things that a professional dancer does. So start calling yourself a professional dancer. Mm-hmm. When you go on auditions, people ask you, what do you do? I'm a professional dancer. People start treating you like a professional dancer. You start getting gigs and start being in that space of a professional dancer. Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. Guess what? You're a fucking professional dancer. So it starts with the self-labeling. It starts with how you see yourself and you just act as if. One trick I would use is like, you know, if you say, for example, I want to go to the gym 5 days a week. It's like, I don't feel like doing this. I'm the kind of guy who goes to the gym 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, where are you getting up tomorrow? Oh, no, he's the kind of guy that goes to the gym 5 days a week. So you just start tricking yourself into it. It doesn't take long. It takes like 2 weeks.
But how do I do that with dating, Osha?
I'm the kind of woman who
dates kind people.
You know? Tate's kind. I recognise that, you know, I'm the kind of woman who understands my worth.
Mm. I'm trying to get out of my cool girl era. I'm trying to vocalise my needs more.
What's the cool girl era?
So
how can you not be? How can you be a cool? Does cool girl mean you have shit boundaries?
Yes. Cool girl is like, if someone bails on you, you go, that's all good. Don't worry about it.
Oh, fuck
that.
That's
fine. Yeah, fuck that. Fuck that. That's so what I always do. That's what I always have done my whole life until 4 days ago.
Well, how did I treat you when you rescheduled this 67 times? My response is, well, of course. Two words, of course.
Yes.
Of course, because she's very busy doing actual, you know, she's got priorities. She's got the gigs. I understand. This can wait. It's not going away.
Yeah.
Your career's not leaving. We've got time. It's fine.
Yes.
Of course.
But when I get let down, I'm internally upset to the point where actually I've had, at the start of last year, I had a guy that I was dating a couple of years before and someone else I had a crush on and then someone who I'd been sleeping with casually for 3 years. All three of them in the space, all of it was done, right? But I'd seen them again in various contexts with alcohol involved. And all three of them had told me that they liked me the whole time that I was sleeping with them or whatever, but I was completely emotionally unavailable and that's why they said, you just didn't care about me. You didn't give a fuck. Meanwhile, I'm crying. Like I'm like panicking before seeing them, flying around the fucking country to see them, like literally like crying to my friends, like going to events because I go, oh, maybe they'll be there. Like doing all this, but because I was so cool girl, it actually made them feel like I was a bitch. So that's why I'm trying to be more upfront with how I feel and my boundaries.
Just write it down. Just write down the patterns. I think that's a good start.
Okay, thank you.
As you write down the patterns, once you've written it down, you're able to go, oh, I see. That and someone needs a fucking very decent, very fucking decent inventory of their mobile phone contact list.
Okay,
you got to fucking start deleting some things, mate. You got to start deleting some shit. And if a number comes up with no name on it, you're like, that's there.
Yeah.
Because I have to lead. I'm not even going to ask who you are.
It's either the ATO or it's someone or it's someone that I've dated before. Both of which don't need to answer.
Yeah, nah.
It's my gov text.
Fuck it. My gov. Just fucking an important message is coming to your inbox. Like,
have you ever checked your inbox?
Yeah. And it's like,
I never have.
We're just updating you about your Medicare levy.
Yeah, just letting you know.
Just so you know that, you know, your eldest is this and, you know, because she's turning 20, da 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 da. Like, oh, okay. Because I thought the rating hellfire of an audit was coming my way.
Yeah, I think that I'm in trouble every time, so I ignore it. Or I say to my assistant, can you look at that for me?
Oh, that also helps.
Yeah.
Wonderfully. I'm glad we're talking about relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Because this actually, today, the show comes out on Valentine's Day.
Oh, happy Valentine's. I wonder if I'm going to be crying. Probably not. I don't really give a fuck about Valentine's Day.
Romance.
What are you going to do?
Oh, fuck. I don't know. probably what most people with little kids do.
Eat cassava cake and watch Bluey.
Eat cassava cake, you know. I generally try to make something at least. There's routine you can't fuck with, right? Mm-hmm. You know, around bedtimes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And as Wolf's getting bigger, he's starting to be a real pork chop at nighttime and really, because we come out of the womb being able to manipulate. All right, I guarantee you that. All right, mm-hmm. we know what it is that we need to do to get health, to get care, to get warmth, to get love, to get protection. We know everything we need to do, know the sounds we need to make since before we're verbal. And so right now he's really enjoying puppeteering two giant adults when he knows his bedtime was 2 hours ago. Mm-hmm. Oh, Dad, the fan's making noise. Fans made noise every night for the last 200 nights. Hadn't bothered you then, buddy, but tonight? All right then. So, I don't know. I don't know about Valentine's Day. I'm going to sound like a fuckwit saying this, but I fail miserably, but I would like to think I try to make as many days as possible Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's beautiful, Osha.
But in my head, that's what I'm thinking I am. And Audrey, if you went upstairs to ask her, she'd be like, fuck him.
He's
like,
maybe. You'll ask her after.
Been with him for 10 years, maybe four times. All right?
I'll confirm with Audrey.
So what I think I do versus what I actually do, probably two very separate things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure. It's like getting flowers and getting flowers for a wedding. Like, you can go to dinner on Tuesday and it'll cost you $80 each. You go to dinner the next day. Oh, this is the couple's fixed price menu, $506. Like, what?
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, well, I'm glad I've never had a Valentine's Day with someone, so that's good.
Get fucked.
You know that I can think? I can't remember.
Never.
Well, I had an on and off boyfriend for like 6 years before Bachelor, and we're still kind of doing bullshit. So it's what, been 10 years now almost, where he would break up with me before every important, he was very avoidant. So he'd break up with me before every important thing. So like my birthday, never were together. His birthday, never were together.
Whoa.
Valentine's Day, never were together. Christmas, never were together. So I never had anything nice in that respect. So yeah, but for that reason, I don't give a fuck about it because I've suppressed the emotions so deeply that it's yeah, it's I just try and ignore it.
Say, for example, you are, let's just invent them. What's a person, say, this time next year, what does your Valentine's Day look like?
God, what do I want to do? Honestly, probably just with someone kind, because Osha told me to, and because I'm the type of person that has kind partners. I don't know. I just think I'd just like someone to come over and have dinner and sit with the dogs and watch Real Housewives and not talk during it. Let me just watch it. I don't know. I think I just want someone to be around. My last relationship was the most intimate and comfortable relationship that I've ever had. And it had its issues. But in that respect, it was the first man that I genuinely enjoyed spending time with that I was dating.
What if I were to tell you that every relationship has issues? It's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, and sometimes if we get called out on something, we can either go, hang on, what is it? What is this person talking about? Is this the thing that I can do without? Or it's had, you know, if it's attacking our self-identity, we're like, well, fine, fuck, we're just not compatible, rather than face the thing. And then you go through that again and again and again and again.
Totally. But my issue is actually the opposite, is that I stay around for too long. So my issue is that I let things get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And then I go, oh, actually, I'm going to try. And then I try and leave. Hence the on and off for 10 years.
Oh, man.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like,
you got on and off for 10 years. I think the most on and off I did, I think, was 2.5.
Yeah. My whole 20s taken. And I'm starting to try now take more accountability for what. Because I use language like taken or like he did this to me, but actually like I allowed, not to victim blame myself in like a what I would call an emotionally abusive relationship with the 10 years on and off. But I feel like I'm trying to be more, the language being my boundaries weren't strong enough. I need to work on my boundaries. I need to heal in this way. Or I allow that to happen for 10 years. And he also did things that were wrong, but there's no point blaming someone else if I'm going to try and heal and be in a healthy relationship. I need to try and work on how I allow that to happen to myself for that long.
Well, that's the part, it's the hard part, isn't it? Is that we have to take responsibility for our part, which can suck because sometimes our part is I chose it.
Yeah.
I'm the one that I chose to stay.
Yeah. And I actually, it's such a pattern that I ran into a guy that I used to date 5 years ago and it was this new girlfriend and couldn't give a shit. But, like, we broke up mutually because it wasn't working. But, and he made a joke that was, oh, what abusive boyfriend do you have now?
Fucking hell.
He's like, which one is it now? What kind of abuse? And I was like, that is very hurtful, not very funny from Nex, but also telling.
Of their assessment of relationships you get into?
Yeah. Well, probably accurate.
Oh. So let's not I don't want to put anyone under the bus. So let's let's look at the inverse of that.
Okay.
All right. Like you got in your car to come here today. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you would have typed, you don't know the area back by the back of your hand. Mm-hmm. All right. You would have typed in your address, this is where I want to go. All right. So you never you can't just set off hoping you're gonna fucking find your way to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. You know, you gotta deliberately get there.
Yeah.
So what are some things that you would like to see? Like what I say is I don't want anyone to be fuckwit and like take shit that you say and go try to reverse engineer it and must have been him or him.
Yeah.
So what are some things that paint the picture of what you want more of or lots of in a relationship in the future? We've done kindness. We've done watching Real Housewives. I'm going to add on. Just read a Wikipedia page so you don't have to ask Abby, who's that every time?
Yep. I'm knowing what the Logies is. Dated a guy last year and I said, I'm presenting at the Logies. And he said, what's the Logies? And I said, blocked. I said, I'm not going to explain what the Logies are.
Oh, man.
Bless him. He was, also, they haven't all been assholes, just to be clear. There's just a few big ones that have been bad, particularly the 10-year on and off one, obviously. I don't know. It's actually a really hard question for me to answer because I used to really, I might cry, but tears get ticks. I used to always be really proud of myself for still being able to get into relationships and still love people fully after how other people had treated me and after my childhood and all that. But like the start of this year, for the first time ever, I just don't think that I even have it in me to even comprehend being happy with someone.
Really?
Mm.
Wow.
Or like someone being nice to me.
Oh, darn. You do.
Sorry. No, that's okay. Probably not. Like, I think I'm just kind of like, oh, well, there's no point trying anymore. So I just don't even, there's not even like a comprehension. But I used to basically be really proud that I was like, look, I can go to therapy and I can get through it and I can still have capacity to trust people. And but I'm just suddenly just like so like not in working order to even comprehend that. So I wouldn't even know where to start with a list of things.
Well, that's fine then. But trust me that it is possible. It's not like you're a very special person, but you're not that special that you're the only woman in the world who cannot find this, okay?
Well,
Fucking everyone eventually figures it out, all right?
Do they though?
If they want to, if they realize that there's a peace in their life by transcending the shit that happened to them when they were younger and having a long, hard look at themselves and a long, hard look at their part, and that part includes who they choose and that part includes, you know, ways that automatically framing things that they might not realize is happening. It's work. It's work, but it's worth it, you know?
Yeah, it is a lot of work. I think I'm just going through I've hit rock bottom and I'm trying to go through the healing part of it.
I'm going to call this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call it. I wish I had a piece of cassava cake to put an exclamation point on it.
You can have some of mine.
Well, I'm trying to guess how old you are. You're 29?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
28 and a half, babe, but 29.
All right. I will be marrying you by your 33rd birthday.
33, you reckon?
Before the age of 33, you will have spent enough time with yourself and with someone and you would have gone, oh, man, this is fucking it.
Yeah.
And you'll call me up and say, hey, remember that podcast where you said you were going to marry me? I said, yeah.
And we can play it at the... Yeah.
Well, I don't care a fuck about that, but you get there. You get there because, unfortunately, people only tend to change when the pain of saying the same becomes more frightening than change.
Yeah, and that's what's happened. I'm so sick of doing this to myself. It's just exhausting and boring, and why am I putting myself through this over and over again? Like, the main thing is I'm like, I'm fucking, this is so boring. Dating these men over and over again that are just not good for me. And I think the issue is what's happened is I've now had it a bad relationship in every way you possibly can have a bad relationship.
Oh, boy. That's a lot.
I think.
So you've collected the whole set.
Whole set, which is really exciting. Yeah, yeah. But
you can put it up on Gumtree.
Yeah. So now I'm like, even with this new crush, Osha, I'm like, oh, I'm actually frightened from every angle about if for some reason we end up, which we probably won't, but for some reason it ends up going well. So even that, I'm like, oh, there's no point even thinking about it going well. But if it goes well, I think at any moment you could turn around and do something really fucked up to me, like from any angle.
Well, I certainly don't think you're alone in that experience. And that's a lot of self-awareness. That's a lot of understanding within yourself. Like, oh, this is that thing that might not belong in this relationship.
I dated someone really lovely last year, but didn't work out for whatever reason. But I was trying to be more aware because I was having these really big, because he was so nice that I was having these really big reactions to things that in the scheme of how I've been treated before was so small. Like one time he was 40 minutes late to get me from the airport. I was sobbing, like, which I've had people ignore me for 5 days and tell me they're going to go and kill themselves and then come back and go, what are you talking about? I didn't say that. Like, so I've had like, and that's like one of the many things, you know, you've gotten that's STDs poor. From boyfriends.
That's
gotten,
a poor form.
Yeah. So then that was that's when I was form. Yeah, 20, but it was actually good that I had the 40 minutes because I was so upset that he was me 40 minutes late and I knew that it was irrational. I was sitting there and I was like, I know this isn't rational to be this upset because it was because he was teaching kids something and it was school holidays. And I was like, I know, I'm not angry. Like I was like, but I'm feeling so upset and I'm sobbing at the airport and I don't know why. And then I eventually was able to do some somatic work and figure out where that upset was in my body. And by the time the 40 minutes was up and he was at the airport, I was still crying, but I was able to explain to him, I was like, look, that actually upset me. And it's because my ex would always ignore me and forget. Also, my dad left when I was born, so having all these abandonment issues as well and these instability on men, I feel like you're now showing to me that you are the same as every other man I've ever dated. So that proves to me that I should just probably get back on a plane and back to Sydney rather than being in Melbourne and all this conversation. And it ended up being one of the moments that brought us really way closer together. Yeah. Even though I was sobbing the whole car ride, but I was able to actually deconstruct what I was feeling and how I was and how much those things hurt me. And it was very healing knowing that. And then he said, well, okay, well, from now on, I will try my best to never be late again. I can't promise it, but I know it's a trigger for you, so I'm going to try harder. And he's never late again until I dumped him. But
but it was really valuable that you had the, you know, you were able to name it and you can investigate it and feelings aren't facts. They could be really powerful. They can be very convincing.
Yeah.
And the way our brains work, which is so unfair, we feel a thing, then we look around for a reason that exists.
Yes.
And it must be that.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what's in front of me.
Yeah.
It might even be that. So good on you for having the self-awareness. You know, not a lot of people would have done that. But that's ultimately where it starts. But I think, all right, you'll get there.
We'll be fine.
You'll get there. You'll get
fucking
there.
Fucking hell.
You'll get there.
Oh, God.
You'll get there. So, but it does lead to, you know, there was probably a time when you didn't use the words semantic.
Yes.
You know.
True.
There was probably a time when you didn't know what that word was or anyone that talked to you about any kind of, you know, breath work or body work, you might have gone, what the fuck do I want that for? Mm-hmm. At what point did you start to understand that, oh, hang on, the things that, you know, either make me really good at this job or make me the interesting person to be around, they also can create situations that may not serve me or put me in, you know, my headspace. I might not be able to handle stressful situations as well as others people. I might aggravate in stressful situations needlessly. At what point did you start to realize you might need a little bit of extra, something else was going on?
Well, in terms of therapy?
Well, just as far as your head goes.
Well, I had a really hard time mentally out of school. I had like a big family thing going on. And I started dating this guy who was telling me he's going to kill himself and then going away for 5 days and then coming back and then all this other stuff in Brisbane before I was on The Bachelor. And I had a moment where I got really drunk in the valley, which where dreams are made of. Osha knows. The place of myth and legends. No, but I was in the valley on Oktoberfest and I'd gone to I'd gone to my GP a bit before because I really wanted a mental health plan. Because I had a 9-to-5 and I couldn't afford to do therapy and full-time uni and full-time work. So I was like, I just need a mental health plan to get some sort of discount. And the GP refused to give me a mental health plan and gave me Valium instead.
Oh, boy.
Which I was 20.
Why did they do that?
It was an older man from Ireland, and I don't know if he was just very traditional or what, but I was begging. I was
very
crying,
fucking
begging.
Old school. That's yeah. Very old school.
And because it was bulk billing, because I couldn't afford to go to a GP that I could choose.
Yeah.
So then I'd taken an afternoon off work to go to the GP that was bulk billing, and I couldn't, I was there and I was like, well, a GP won't give this to me. I was 20 years old. And this is before, I feel like TikTok's done a lot of good in terms of mental health and advocacy, medical trauma even. But in 2015, which is such a short time ago, but it feels like a whole different world in terms of knowledge and understanding of mental health. So I was just like, okay, cool, I'll have the Valium. And then I took the Valium that weekend and then I drank more than usual because I don't really drink. I'm not a huge drinker, never have been.
Welcome to the Beer and Benzo Fest.
So I'm
the benzodiazepine and perfect pilsners combined.
Oh my God, can you imagine? 20 years old, first time having Valium, Jesus. I had a flask of vodka, which is a lot for me now even, but like on Valium. And I didn't understand. He didn't explain to me the combination of alcohol and Valium. He didn't explain any of that.
That's very, very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Well, what ended up happening was I walked to the Story Bridge, jump off. I was at the Flying Cock. Yeah. In the valley, and just randomly something switched and I just left. And I remember I walked up to my shoes off, to my heels off, and was walking up to the bridge. And then I saw the Lifeline number and I thought, in my drunken valley, I said, better do this. So then I called Lifeline, and also because there were the grates above the bridge where you can't jump. So I was like, oh, it's going to be a hassle in a skirt. And then I was kind of standing there trying to figure it out. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'll just call Lifeline and see if I can help myself here. Then an ambulance came, went to hospital, and it was history. So from that, then the next week I went to a different GP who was lovely to get a mental health plan. And that was, it was a big wake-up call. But at that GP appointment, which was wonderful, so the weekend before I'd been, went to the bridge with the intent to jump off Lifeline, the Lifeline sign, I guess saved my life, but also those grates, which... I don't know. Before this, I would always go, who's actually calling Lifeline when they're at the bridge? Like, if you're there, you're doing it. But, which is very dark, obviously. But I thank God for those Lifeline signs.
It's still, having been in that situation myself, it's the last thing you want to do.
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like the best and only solution you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just looking for, I don't know any other way to handle this than this.
Yeah.
And so... A, greats, awesome. Lifeline, even more awesome. I'm grateful that was there.
Yeah, I mean, because if it wasn't, I don't know what I would have done. But so then the next week I booked into a new GP, and this is kind of funny, but not really. And I went to the GP and he was like, great, okay. And he sits down and he goes, great, so I'm here to get chlamydia medication. And I went, huh? And he went, oh, I got your results from your other GP. You've got chlamydia. And I was like... I was like, no, I actually went to the Story Bridge on the weekend and went to the psych ward. So I actually just wanted a mental health plan, but I guess I'll also take the antibiotics for the chlamydia. And he went, oh. but he was lovely and angelic. But the timing of all this shit happening. So that was kind of when I started actually,
yeah.
But it took a few years to find a psychologist that I thought was good enough. She was great, but then going on The Bachelor, obviously having the trolling after The Bachelor was horrendous. That's when I kind of was like, okay, now I need to seriously take this seriously because this is fucking terrifying. Like mum during The Bachelor when I was getting trolled told me years later that she would go in my room and check that I was breathing at night to make sure I hadn't killed myself because I was living with mum because I couldn't deal with living by myself.
Yeah, fair.
And mum would come in and check on me every night, she told me only a couple of years ago. So then after that, I tried to actually go through therapy and I had moments where I, you know what it's like, you get the right medication, you get the right therapist and you think you're fixed.
That's the start of it.
Yeah. And then you go, oh, I'm actually better now. No more medication, no more therapy. No.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to learn that. And I feel like mental health journey and my awareness of things like somatic healing has come from me realizing, as well with ADHD, realizing that maybe like just going and talking to someone once a month isn't the right formula for me. So I would, you know, look up different kinds of therapy. I did like a somatic healing course online, like a Zoom course in COVID, because I wanted to try and just do something. And now I want to do EMDR, like get into EMDR.
Oh, yeah, I've done that. I did that when I was about 19, 20. It's extraordinary.
That's what everyone says. Because I feel like my issue is that in this job, in the podcast especially, I spend all this time talking to people that are much smarter than I am in mental health, and I learn so much, and I have a way of avoiding my emotions by intellectualizing what's actually quote-unquote wrong with me. So I know that I have a disorganized attachment style, that my childhood trauma can do this, and like I was saying before about the plan, I can recognize that this is why this is happening. But I get to the point where I go, okay, I've got like the answer to why. So why aren't I better? I know exactly why I do all the things that I do.
Yeah.
So that's when things like somatic healing and doing schema therapy and now hopefully EMDR have come into it. But it's been like a journey to not just.
Yeah. You've got to keep trying. You've got to keep trying for the thing that works.
Different things. Like, I want to try breath work. I'm like.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I'm just trying to. And exercising every day is super also important. Helping. It's like, it's not. I feel like the way that mental health is sold to people is like, get into therapy and you'll be fixed. Get into therapy and get into Lexapro and you'll be fine. And you need to do so much. It's like daily work.
It's like you graduate therapy and then you're good forever.
Mm-hmm.
You generally work with a therapist. In my experience, I work with a therapist to get around a particular thing or past a particular issue. And when I reach a sense of equilibrium, like, I think we did what we came here to do. So I think we did too. All right, then chuff off. And then now you're able to handle more and do more. You know, you're able to, your life becomes a little bigger and there's a little more stress. And then now you're in a situation where like suddenly this fucking trapdoor opens up with, oh my God.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's success. I don't know what to do with it.
Yes.
Where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought everything was cool. Now why do I keep missing? Why am I sabotaging everything? And then, oh, I've got a bit more work to do. Mm-hmm. And then you get, but it's a daily thing. Like you don't accidentally keep a six pack abs, right?
No.
You've got to watch really hard what you eat and you've got to train all the time to keep that physique. Similarly, you don't accidentally have good mental health. You actually have to work at it and make it a part of your day to maintain it. But
particularly in this industry, I think.
Yeah.
Huge thing that I'm realizing recently is how much it affects me that, I mean, our failures are public.
Yeah.
Do you ever think, I think I'm just realizing this year for some reason, like, for example, show ratings. I feel this, see, you've elevated. But was there ever a time where you, because I try to think about why this job is so stressful to me and why it affects me so much. Like, it makes me so anxious all the time. And I think the biggest thing, well, one of the big things that I only realized literally last week, when I was just sitting, thinking and doing some breathing and some somatic work, was that, all my failures are public and therefore everyone can laugh at me and think, haha, you thought this would do well.
Well, I don't want to, do what happened to, Kanye West, who were in my, just from watching the documentary, what I saw was that everyone actually was staring at him and laughing at him and calling him names, and then his reality just permeated completely, and then he just ends up this babbling dude on the beach in, Puerto Rico in a flak jacket, and it's fucking so bad. There is a point where those things really did matter, and then I had to, for me, it was I had to detach from it because ultimately I'm not in control of it. All right. I truly can only do the very, very best that I can do on the day, in the moment. I've done stuff that's never gone to air.
Yeah.
You know, I've said yes to shows that never got commissioned.
Yes.
You know, things that have been green lit and then the green lights turns to an amber, then turns to a kind of blinking aqua for about a decade. And it's an on and off 10-year
yeah.
thing.
Wow. You know? So you get it. So,
ultimately, you know, what's the only thing? I don't work in marketing. I don't work in programming. I don't work in promos. Yeah. I don't know any of that. I can control the part I can control. And as long as I have done absolutely everything I can to make sure that my contribution to this project that 150 people are involved in is amazing, that's all I can do.
Yeah.
I go home. Because it might not even go to air. Mm. You know, it's hard. It was hard to get there because, don't get me wrong, like there are people that make a fuck ton of money off advertising on web pages that go, ha-ha,
yeah.
look at this person. Aren't they dumb for having a go?
Yes.
Like, they exist and they make a lot of money off it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not bonkers. Mm. That actually does happen. And that's how those people choose to pay their rent and feed their children. Good for them. Is it real? Nope. It's not real.
Yeah.
It's not real.
Yeah, no one's really thinking about me that often in that way. But I think it's as well because of this breakup. I think this has all come to light.
Mm.
I think I'm feeling so anxious. My anxiety is trying to place it on something.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, and then I think I'm going, okay, what am I insecure about? Like why? Because, again, I'm trying to do the avoidance thing of detaching from how I'm actually feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be this, like, high level of, okay, I understand why. I'm anxious because my failures are public. And that's why. And if I can just get rid of that, then I'll be happier again. But you know what I mean? It's like I'm trying to intellectualize everything and it just doesn't work that way.
Or you could just be better with accepting that you have chosen this.
Mm.
You know, Hyman is my favorite. I say it all the time. It's my favorite movie quote, Hyman Roth to Michael Corleone in Godfather 2. I never complained because this is the business we have chosen.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, you could still work in your real estate analyst job.
Yeah, which I do you not could, want
people,
to.
They clocked off at 5 o'clock. They went and played mixed touch. They went home. They had a wank. They went to sleep. All right. They got up the next day. They got on the train from Cleveland and they fucking did it again.
Mm.
And they've got money in their super and they plan their holidays to Bali and fucking that's off they go. They pay down their Hilux. That's it. That's for them. Happy days. Great. I fall asleep when I do an office job. I've tried. I'm terrible at it. It's not good for me. This is the only thing I've ever been able to do. It comes with this.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that you're kind of adding to my guilt then. So once I feel anxiety about the job and anything negative about our job, which we're so lucky to do, I then feel the guilt about, well, I'm just full of negative emotions at the moment.
Hey, thanks. Give it a name. Hey, thanks, guilt. Glad you're here. I appreciate it. You're there trying to do me a favor. You're trying to help me stay safe and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm just going to keep doing this. You stay you over there. Do your thing.
Yeah.
I'll be right there. I'm not looking at you. I'm just not letting you make the choice right now. So thanks. I'm just going to keep doing this thing.
Yeah.
Cheers. For now. I know what you want me to do. I will if I need to because, you know, I have every other time. But just – so I found like it's a technique – okay, who wrote about it? Oh, it's a happiness trap. What's his freaking name? It's amazing. Just give it a name. Give it a stupid cartoon face. You know, I've got Pete the Planner and Sarah from Solutions.
Okay.
Sarah from Solutions is always here. She's always like, fucking, I tell you what you can do. You can do this. You can start a business. Da, 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 da. And then I'm like, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Don't just go start something new because this thing's not working. Fix the thing that's not working.
Thanks,
Sarah. You know? And so I need to be mindful that my brain can do that sometimes. I'm just like, it's okay.
Okay.
You're all right. You're fucking good at what you do. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
Don't accidentally, I've said this before, you don't accidentally have the career you have. You fucking work really hard, hard to do this. Just a moment away to say that tickets for the live shows are on sale right now. NTNN NNN is hitting the Melbourne International Comedy Festival once again. You can get tickets in the show notes. We'd love to see you there. It's a different show every night. It's super duper fun. If you want to get a taste of it, have a listen to the show on Friday. It'll make a whole lot of sense. It was so much fun last time. More than 1,000 people saw the show last time. We took that show and it was so good when the network saw it. They said, yes, we'll make a pilot out of that. So those things are still in the works. Sometimes TV shows take a long time to get to screen because of various other factors, but we're having too much fun, so we don't want to stop doing it. All the tickets are available at oshaginsberg.com. We're on late, 9:30. That's when you can see us at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival starting on the 28th of March. And you know what? It's my birthday on the 29th. So shout yourself a ticket to my birthday. You can come. I'll see you there. Oh, back with Abby in a sec.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
To hear that you're making another series of F-Boy Island makes me very happy, because it's easily the greatest dating show that's ever been made.
Isn't it fantastic?
It's fucking excellent.
It's fucking amazing. It's actually, we've got season two in, starting in a few weeks, and I am giddy at the thought of going to work. It's like we're shooting for a short amount of time, and I'm sad that it's only a short shoot, but it's going to be so much fun. It's so, it's such a strange thing to have a borderline, not that it's scripted, but it's obviously a heavily produced, the Limbros is scripted. Having such a strange format that is a comedy satire, almost scripted reality show. It's the weirdest thing to be part of.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and the crew are the same crew as Bachelor, so you know all of them, and they're all the funniest. They literally call me and I like giggle on the phone to them for half an hour about their silly ideas for dates.
Yeah.
And I'm so lucky to be a part of it, because I think it's the best show not only to be a part of, but it's the only show that I watch myself back on. Masked Singer, I can't watch myself back on. Because I just, hey, also we know what happens. So the thrill there.
It's nice to see what makes the cut.
It's a good point, actually, to see what
they left a couple of things. They left a couple of things in the cut this time that I didn't think they would.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like that, your Miranda Kerr.
Yeah, they left that in the cut. They left that in the cut, and they left it in the timing that it played out as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it played out very similar timing to how it actually happened.
That was great for
and
Mosha.
I thought it was beautiful.
I think about that probably once a week. I go, God, that was good for Mosha.
It was good for you, because you took it. You took it in the way it was intended.
It was so good.
I wasn't trying to got you or
no,
anything.
No, but it was too good like... to not jump that from you. It was so amazing.
She come from a place of love. It come from
beautiful.
A place of comment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
but yeah, F-Boy. Jesus.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. The other reason I love F-Boy Island, I think I love it. There's maybe, I don't know, 20 people in the world who get to love it the way that I love it, maybe less, because I know a number of the people who work on it as camera operators and audio operators. Mm. And I also know the creative editorial team behind it. Mm. And I know I can see on screen, it's like, oh, Dean.
Oh. Dean. So Dean's our EP. Dean is, it's incredible
he's
what
amazing.
He's done.
He's amazing.
And Spence.
They're just artists, fucking artists. I think people quite get how incredibly difficult it is to be able to make a show like that come out the way it is. You don't just put hot people in a villa and start filming.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to make it become what it is.
I think reality gets shat on a lot in media, right? Like if as a reality dater, everyone goes, oh, fuck, it's the lowest form of television. And I have a few thoughts on that, obviously. As a consumer.
I have a 24-hour shopping channel that I would like to introduce you to. Though bear in mind, I would fucking host a shit out of a 24-hour shopping channel and I'd fucking nail it.
You'd revive it. You'd bring it back. It's all I'd watch all day. Everyone would love it.
Nail it.
But I feel like with reality, it's shut on for a few. As a consumer, I think it's really valuable in the way that, like Real Housewives, for example, and Maths and Bachelor, I think it's quite sexist to say that it's bullshit, because I think a lot of women, are the main participants and the main drama for the show often, except for in Bachelorette. But I also think that it's incredible to figure out who your friends are and if their values align with you. So if you're both watching The Bachelor and something happens, like the dog cunt saga, for example.
Beautiful.
Beautiful television. I'm sure everyone would have been very excited.
Chef's kiss.
Maybe.
It's fantastic. Such a money.
Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, I want to say wrong move from me, but probably the right move. But so like with that, for example, watching at home, if you're seeing that, you can have a discussion with your friends even the next day saying, would you have dobbed? Like, would you have told someone that someone was calling you a dog cunt? Like, and I think it creates all these conversations. Like in Real Housewives, one of the housewives, Erica, her husband was scamming people. Basically, he was he took money from orphans and widows that died in a plane
crash. If you're going to take money.
Oh, that's the group you want to take
gonna,
them from?
If you're going to aim for the stars, like, reach for the moon, head for the stars.
Yeah, and that's the true Tom
Whatever the fuck it is, I don't know.
But so he was convicted and there was the whole season was conversations around whether she is liable for his actions as.
What?
Well, she also had been benefiting with money and been living a lifestyle. And it's a conversation around, like, if you're married to someone, are you as bad of a person as that person? Is she an idiot for having no idea about the finances? Or is she manipulative and a villain because she did know? Like, those are the two options. And it was a whole conversation around, like, as well, like, women taking on their husband's actions, whereas men don't really have the same thing with it. Like, there's always conversations that can be had just from quote unquote stupid drama. So I think that the consumer reality is amazing. I also think to be able to make a reality show is incredibly difficult. From casting to cast the right people, you could have, if you had like 20 me's in a room, it would make no fucking sense. Like, you have to have not just people who are interesting, but also people that are able to like have that personality projected onto them and will react in a certain way. You have to almost kind of like curate like a petri dish of people to create.
For every person that is you that gets cast, there needs one person to your side who makes you,
mm-hmm.
more you, and there needs another person that side who will bring out something that you never show.
Yes.
And you have, it may that be either vulnerability, it might be upset, mm-hmm. who knows, but there has to be another person in there who will get you to do a thing you otherwise, you know, push you outside of the version of you that mm-hmm. is the public version of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all for the purpose of the final result,
mm-hmm.
and that is to, you know, fast track the discovery that needs to go on for a lasting relationship to take place in quite a short amount of time.
Yeah, well, even that's that important. Element on dating show, this is the thing, it isn't, Bachelor especially, isn't just about drama. There's also the element of having to try and curate relationships together, like matchmaking someone. And I just think the reality gets shut on way too much because I think that it's actually, obviously I haven't done drama and actors are amazing and blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
But it's incredibly difficult to create a good reality show. Like last year with F Boy Island, with Vernon, one of the main villains, exes coming back, that was orchestrated the day before. The producers to be able to do that are genuinely incredible geniuses. They have an understanding of how people work. They can get people to do things, and not even in like an evil way. They can convince someone that they're going to be safe. They have to create a safe environment. I had to go and speak to her before she came on set, which was obviously fine to do, but there are so many elements to go into it. Every single person on the crew is so talented, and I just think the reality is really underappreciated. Only you will agree with
me. As someone who's been on both sides of it now, what would you say? And bear in mind that I was at the very genesis of this happening on reality shows. What do you think is the biggest misconception about how much support is there for contestants?
Well, I remember you had asked about this because I feel like you in interviews get accused almost of not giving the contestants enough support. I don't think there is any more support that I could have gotten on the show in my season. So on Bachelor, we had a therapist that would talk to us whenever we wanted, but like I think we had regular check-ins like every couple of days or something that we had to do, or we've got the option, they reminded us, like, do you want to talk to the therapist? By memory, Bachelor in Paradise, we had a therapist plus a wellness coach at that point, and that was the first time they had the wellness coach. And afterwards, I can still call the therapist whenever I want if I really need to. So I essentially have free therapy.
Shove your mental health plan, motherfucker.
Yeah, sucked in.
I got a 1-800 number out for life.
So I think that the support, even on set, I mean, Dean, on set, the girls have been talking about my abortion. I had an abortion. And this is my opinion. They'd taken me telling them that and then decided that I didn't want to have kids and then told Matt that I didn't want to have kids. That was like a whole storyline. You might have missed it. It was like, Ivy doesn't want kids. She doesn't want to settle down. She's too young. She's too silly. And they kept telling Matt this. And then Matt asked me about the kids thing, and I'd had the abortion like 9 months before or something. Like, it was very recent. And Dean, who is the EP of F-Boy Island, people think producers are these evil, like, demons, and they're really not. I remember I was crying on the floor of the bedroom, and I said, can I please just talk to Matt off camera? And he let me, no problems. I told him I was mic'd up still. It was never used. It was never used as a plotline because they knew how emotionally awful that would be for me. So even on set, I was very supported, even though I didn't have many friends. I had Wendy, the minder. I had all the crew.
I still lovely. Work with Wendy. She's delightful.
She's amazing. Yeah. She's like, I love her. Like, we ended up having New Year's together that year, and she works in F-Boy Island. And I'm still friends with so many of the crew. My minders, I still have at my birthday lunches. So I feel like people think that you're kind of thrown to the wolves, which you are in a way, but there is no more support possible unless everyone is guaranteed a good edit. And if everyone is guaranteed a good edit, then no one's going to watch the fucking show. So what's the point?
And even when the edit is what it is, there's a lot of conversations with that person going, hey, I just want you to know, this Wednesday night, do you remember that thing that happened?
Mm.
So that's coming, all right? And the way it plays out in the cut, just so you know, is you know, this? It's very clear that I'm not going to use yours. Just say, for example, you, Jonathan, I don't know if you've ever had a Jonathan, you called Scott, don't know if you've ever had Scott, you called him a fuckwit and someone who'd make a terrible dad. Now, we see this full frame and there's no edits.
Yes.
Okay? So it is something that you said.
Yeah.
And when we cast you, we told you that everything is going to be part of the show. Mm. So I wanted you to know that this is there. But I'll tell you, who knows what's going to happen in the news tomorrow. It might not blow up.
Mm.
If it does, we're here for you. And, you know, they're very, very good because we're ultimately dealing with the currency that you're dealing in reality is you're dealing with people's authentic emotional responses.
Mm.
That's what you're asking them to do.
Mm-hmm.
You have a duty of care to look after them if they're going through emotional situations they otherwise and clearly would never go through because we want you to bungee jump down here and propose halfway down and be married by the bottom.
Yeah.
Ta-da! It's, like, it's fucking bananas.
It's not, yeah.
So you have to look after people. And, and I think maybe, I don't know why people, maybe I probably do know, maybe that's the only reason that they might think could possibly be going on for someone to say yes to something that this person watching would otherwise have said no to, that they must have been tricked into it or there must be no other reason they've done this or they're being, you know, they've been manipulated into saying or doing this thing.
Mm.
You don't accidentally get on one of these shows. Because there's a process. Yeah. You've got to pass psych and then you've got to pass psych.
Yes. Like, there's like 3-hour-long psych evaluations and personality tests and conversation with producers that go for, hours. I remember we booked meeting rooms like every day before The Bachelor talking to like different psychologists, different, like, I don't know, like a personality test person to see what my, you know, it's like INT, whatever the fuck, you know. What's it, Myers-Briggs?
Oh, Myers-Briggs.
I think like something
like
that.
I've done that. I find that interesting.
But there also is Frankenbiting, so we have to admit that.
Pardon?
We have to talk about Frankenbiting though.
Frankenbiting,
like taking
Frankengrab.
Yeah.
Frankengrab. Abby, I don't know anything what you're talking about because tonight that girl and I, so hot for her.
Like, I just, okay, because people say to me, well, they couldn't make you say it. They go, well, they can make you say things in the post.
I've done this I shot a documentary, we made a second one about pain, about chronic and persistent pain and the scratch voiceover. They have taken my master interview and they have fed it into a voice cloner, AI voice cloner. And so the whole scratch voiceover is my voice. And I've never said a fucking thing.
That's scary.
Totes. So no more Frankengrabs.
No more, thank you, ever. No, we don't want it at all. Oh,
but once
God.
You spot them, it's like when I watch Survivor and, you know, it's in the middle of a challenge or whatever. And the sentence features 4 separate costume changes because now they're on a rock, now they're on a log, now they're over here, now they're over there.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that they might need a person saying, and he's never done that before. They might have been talking about this bloke over there.
Yeah.
And that conversation's never going to get used, but they need that to get them from here to there to explain what's going to happen at Tribal that night. So there's a bit of wiggle room.
I mean, for example, my biggest beef with Bachelor was this one grab of me that actually wasn't Frankenbitten. And it was I was making a joke. I was making a joke about one of the producers being hot. And I'm sipping my water. If you can go back and watch, you can see. And I go, stay away from my man, making a joke because, like, he was going on a date with someone, one of the producers that I thought was hot. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone thought it was hot.
Because he was, like, funny. And it was only because we were bored. Because what else could
you
talk about?
I love that you mouth that. There's three cameras on you right now.
But, like... And it was literally like silly. It was almost like an in joke with all of us. We all had a crush on this person. It was like if Matt doesn't work out, oh, we'll go be with him because he was decent looking and was in the vicinity of the mansion. And do you know what I mean?
Like there's a bar, and then there's.
Yeah. It was like, if I can't have Matt, the gorgeous astrophysicist, then I'll maybe make jokes about the, you know, make yourself feel better. There was a scene where I go, stay away from my man. And they're like, suck. And that was obviously. Then used in relation to one of the girls going on a date. And I was like, I wish I could, and I couldn't even explain it away. I like can't even explain that I had a crush on a producer because that's even worse.
Yeah.
That's even
worse. But they use it saying that you were saying it about Matt.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. But it's even worse publicly if I go, actually, it was about a producer. Then I go, I'm not for the right reasons. Not for the right reasons.
Can we just talk for a fucking second about the Matt Agnew rig scenario?
Oh, babe, it's insane.
Like when astrophysics meets muscle optimization and hormone response science, put a fucking protocol in front of a scientist and be like, I've got to eat what to do what? Okay.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
Totally.
Of course. I never thought of it that way.
Because he's a fucking scientist.
Yeah, he knows exactly the formula to get it done. He goes, yeah, of course.
Well, of course, it's science. Here, if I have these calories and this time under tension and this load and this recovery time, and then he says, well, of course, what's going to happen is all of it. And then next thing you know, like... I'm just fucking all long-haired and just like just slabs of meat where his peck should be. Like
in the ocean in Perth all the
tomahawk
time. He's always in like, water.
Yeah, because he can legitimately get away with showing his V-channels.
Yes.
I was going to use another word.
Yes.
And I look at him like, oh, I love you. He's amazing.
God, he's great.
He's rad lovely. As shit. I like him. So we were talking about being, you know, well, I guess what people don't quite get about the gig that you do, more so with you, because you have come along at a time when you are a brand that is in control of creating revenue streams based upon that brand way more than I am, and that's okay. It's how it is. There's a professionalism. There's a talent. There's understanding the gig you're there to do. And there's also kind of there's an entrepreneurial edge to what it is that this job is now. Yeah. And if there's one thing I'm really, you know, stoked for you is that you really do your best to identify and test, is this going to work? Is this going to work? And put your money where your mouth is. Commit to it. It might not work. That's fine. But you got to test it. You got to launch it. You got to see if it's going to work. You're going to see which product's going to hit. And yes, no, yes, no. You've had some colossal successes. You've had some things that
didn't work out.
That's fine.
Yep.
We all have. You can't be short of, you know, things to work on. Is there a, like a decision-making kind of matrix? Is there a filter that you put things through?
Oh, if I will, try and start something myself or if I'll say yes to a job?
Creating like, no, as far as like not broadcast, like
creating like doing something physical. Yeah. I feel like Verbose, the clothing brand, my sister was designing it. So I kind of with that, I think that's why it also didn't quite work with my schedule was because it was my sister's passion. And then I was so busy. What I've discovered is my passion is actually media and hosting and podcasting and producing and, you know, maybe writing in the future. So I think with that, it was kind of like, okay, it wasn't a very well thought through plan, except for like, I have money to start this. My sister can do this. I have business partners and off we go and that's fine. I think where that went wrong was that I got burnout from it because I wasn't passionate about it. I think with ADHD, I can film for 17 hours in a row, 15 hours in a row every day for weeks, getting up at 6, doing radio and podcasting and then going on set. And I'm like a bit tired, but I'm not losing my mind. And then as soon as I get something that I'm not obsessed with or hyper-fixating on, then it will burn me the fuck out. That'll be the thing that sends me over the edge. So what I did with that was not take that into account and therefore the burnout happened really easily, really quickly. It was making money. I could have kept going. we were selling out everything, but I just needed to stop. So what I guess I didn't have a process in the past, and now my process is more like, if everything else went away, could I do this by itself? Do I care enough about this thing by itself? And I think when it comes down to it, all I really care about is doing what I already do. So now I need to put all my energy into what I'm already doing. Yeah. And maybe that's more podcasting, but that would be, I guess, I have a few podcast ideas. I loved your 24 ideas for 20, because honestly, my notes app is, I was like, this is literally my brain. Just ideas that I go, that'd be great. Never going to do it, but that would be great.
Tell me, I've never started a business with, you know, anybody in my family. I work with my brother a little bit, but
yeah.
How did that play out? Because I know plenty of people listening would be in business with, you know,
yeah.
siblings.
I mean, it was, my sister and I have always gotten along, but the issue was that it was a lot of pressure to be, not supporting her because she was working, but like to be like, when I was like, we can't do this anymore, it was a lot of like, I felt really guilty for letting her down because she'd moved to Sydney to do it from, her visa ended in London, she came back to Australia, and when she was between Sydney and Melbourne, I was like, move to Sydney, you can work for this thing that I'm starting.
But did you figure it out? Like, was Christmas okay?
Oh, we're so fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
like,
the go-to-go.
Oh, we didn't even have a fight. Okay. Like, literally, okay. She was like, oh, Abby. And I go, our fights are literally this, Abby. And I go, so. And that's kind of, we okay. don't fight.
That's what I was kind of.
Yeah, no.
That sort of thing, people don't talk for 20 years.
Yeah,
if
no.
If it
no.
goes by.
My family is very, like, you know how your family's fighting about wills and stuff? Like,
sometimes,
doing weird
yeah.
shit like that? Like, my family's yeah. just so not like, we just so. Because my grandma was an orphan, so I think that maybe we're just instilled in us to never fight with your family for anything stupid. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think that it was like, we obviously have fights because.
Yeah, we're human.
But it's mainly political, to be honest. It's mainly like yeah. political differences. It's not really. And then we go, anyway, like we'll be screaming at Christmas and then be like, anyway, that's where I got my political interests from. Actually, Mum and I had a fight over Christmas. Not even a fight. It was like, it's like a debate. It's an aggressive debate
yeah.
that is with your mum. So you can say, shut the fuck up, you know?
Yeah.
And after we'd said sorry and love you, that was silly to have a huge fight about. I kind of was thinking, and I was like, this is why I'm so good at debating. It's, I've been sharpening my skills since I was 4 years old about how to get what I want, about how to properly have an argument that is going to
yeah.
get through to a baby boomer about different political yeah. issues. But so, yeah, my family don't really fight about those things. But the butt plug, that's what I'm passionate about.
This is wonderful.
Yeah.
To have passion about something is important. You've got to have a purpose. You've got to have a purpose. And if that purpose is helping people have some pleasure, then that's okay.
Exactly. So I realized, so in contrast to the clothing, the butt plug aligns, okay, it works for a few reasons. Well, obviously it physically works, but it works because it aligns with like what I actually like, enjoy speaking about and enjoy doing and enjoy making content about and enjoy educating people on, and also what I enjoy learning about. So even in this process, it was created with a sex therapist, Georgia Grace, as well, us doing education and me learning things from her, even on set while we were taking photos of the thing that we'd created together. And it also works because it aligns with my brand. That's the other thing, which sounds very, but it's so scary to admit that things like that.
Is it like a book? Do you be like, okay, let's make 5,000 and see what happens.
With
and
the
then
plugs?
Yeah. And then do you go, oh, once we get to 2,000, then we'll order another lot. Like, do you have a number?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to say the number,
but that's
we, do
fine.
We do have a number that we have that is, I think, conservative, but it's actually shocked me that people are still, are so shocked by the butt plug still. People can't believe it. I mean, my mum said to me, and she's not conservative, but she was like, even my mum was very chill. She was like, I didn't even know what a butt plug was, and I'm very excited to learn about it. I love it. But people online are like trolling me about the butt plug. And I'm like, I didn't realize people were so upset about anal play, but, you know.
What are they worried about?
The strange thing is I've never had so many joke comments on a post before, like when I did the other vibrator. Everyone was very like supportive and publicly supportive. With this, there's way more DMs and all the public comments of people tagging their friends going, ha ha, this one's for you, mate. Ha ha.
And blokes.
It's, yeah, blokes.
Ah.
Tagging all like girls, tagging their boyfriends going, ha ha ha, imagine if I brought this home. And it's a really interesting thing that I've noticed. It's crazy because I've had a sex toy before, obviously, which did well, and there was nothing like this. And people aren't really angry. It's like they're just like, they think it's banter. They think that it's like a bit from me, which is even more mind-blowing and harder for me to even respond to because I go, are you guys all right?
That you're putting out a product as a gag?
Almost, yeah. Or they think that like people literally were like, when I first said it, resharing it to their stories going, is this a joke? Thinking that it was a joke. I'm going, I'm sorry that you haven't ever experienced this. It's sad for all of you. It's all sad.
Could you imagine, like, there's moving in together.
Mm-hmm.
There's sharing the Netflix password.
Mm-hmm.
Phone passcode.
Oh.
What would it tell you if a man says to you, no one's ever done that to me before? Like, is that, that's like, one, it's a beautiful gift.
Yeah, I had someone
it's a beautiful
recently
gift.
Say, can we do this with your new butt plug? And I said, maybe. I'll think about it. I don't really like you enough anymore. But it was a nice compliment.
It's a beautiful gift.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful gift.
But yeah.
It's a beautiful gift. Give the gift.
Give the gift of exploration. We love it.
Let's just see what your body does. Mm. It's fine. It might bring you closer together.
I think it will in more ways than one, to be honest. I think it's a beautiful thing. I think people are, the taboo around it is really, it's honestly, it's blown my mind. I would expect a taboo, but I didn't think people would be so fearful because it's taboo in both ways. Women have been like doing butt stuff has been like almost a punchline of like, for his birthday or for Christmas, we'll do butt stuff. You know what I mean? Where it's like they're feeling pressure and it's almost like a joke. And I've said in interviews, I feel like butt stuff now is where female masturbation was 5 years ago.
Five?
I reckon when I did the other vibrator.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean? I think there's like people will talk about it like with their closest friends over dinner. People are easing in,
right.
For lack of a better term.
Right.
They've lubed up and they're trying it out, but they're not quite in yet. You know what I mean? And I'm hoping to get people in.
Just take a couple of breaths. Be with the discomfort moment before you realise it. You'll actually find that, this is actually okay.
Yeah.
And you'll notice, you might even just notice that even if it's not for you, that's fine. You're happy that other people are enjoying it.
Oh, that's so true. And that's also true. A good analogy for my love life, dating someone kind. Yeah. I'll see how I go and ease in.
It's not like...
Wow, that's life
it's
advice.
It's not like you're not literally forcing people to put this device inside their bodies.
No.
This is a voluntary purchase that people can or cannot choose to do up to you. And
so
if people don't want to purchase it, then boy, oh boy, a lot of that startup money is going to get written off.
Yeah.
All right? And somewhere there's going to be a warehouse clearance sale, like fucking unused Razor scooters and USB butt plugs. There you are.
We love.
And
that's my dream, Razor scooter and butt plug.
You'll laugh about it. Combo pack next Christmas. It's like anyone that says, I fucking hate that show. It's like, great.
Okay.
You really hate it? Don't watch it. That's the worst thing you can do to me.
Yeah. Why are you commenting?
Because if you're coming to this page and commenting or whatever you want, you've given me a like or a comment or review.
True.
Like, you actually think, like, do you understand? The worst thing you can do to somebody whose visual public thing you don't like is to not pay attention to it.
Yeah.
That's more damaging than anything.
Yeah, that's so true.
Knock yourself out.
All these troll farms.
I keep trying to give you a moment to eat that cassava cake.
I know.
Hang on. Let me ask you. Hang on.
Okay.
So what are you going to do with the butt plug money?
Take time off.
Pretty good.
And use that time off to write a TV show. That's my thing.
I like it.
Have many ideas and get actual treatments together for my notes app full of ideas. I'm going to actually relax, allow myself to be creative and actually do the things I've been meaning to do for the past year and a half.
It's important.
Yeah, that's kind of what I want to do, is use it to be like, I'm okay financially, completely okay, no matter what the mortgage rates are doing, and I can sit there and I can just let myself be creative and relax.
Nice.
I'm trying to be more present this year.
It's important.
Work less, not get to burn out.
Yeah, you don't want to have to take an emergency holiday again.
That was so bad.
I'm glad you did it, though.
Oh, my God. I mean, it worked. It was amazing to Thailand.
I'm glad you did it.
Yeah, the day after Masked Singer.
Yeah.
Me going, I need to get out of here. I'm so stressed.
I'm glad you did it.
Who gets stressed about Masked Singer? It's like the best job.
They're long days. And they're intense days.
Yeah,
you're
it's
on.
Fun.
Being on is, yeah.
Mm. And now I can eat my cassava cake.
Yeah. One of my dogs has to go and do some stuff. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Full circle.
We ended as you began.
things
chewing on my wife's cake. That was Abby Chatfield. You know where she is. You know what to get your friend for Christmas now. You can contribute to that lovely holiday that she's going to take. If you like this episode, if it helped you understand something a little bit more, if it helped you think, you know what, there's someone in my life who doesn't quite get what Abby's about, I'm going to send her this, or send him this, or send them this. Share this episode with them. Send them a link. Like this show if you can. Subscribe, follow wherever you can. Let somebody know. Thank you so much to everyone that helped me make the show. Andy Marr on audio and video post-production. Abby Benno, who produced it. Toe Hider, who made the music. Ben and Monica for keeping the lights on OGTV. I'll be back here on Friday with the news team. Happy Valentine's Day.